I think we should save the best one for last.
Yeah, and that I think way, that's fair.
And that way you, the person we slightly just scorned, you don't click off the video because we know how you are. That's why we don't have faith in you to build the deck.
y'all don't stick around. You know what? However, you, the person who I did point out, you did a good job. You hit like and subscribe and click that bell.
Right.
The other person.
Right.
I'll have faith in you once you subscribe, like, and turn on notifications, which
I feel like we're really underestimating that person over there because they are actually signed up for the Patreon. And I have a lot of faith in people who do that, too, for sure.
Good point. Good point. Figure this out. I figure as we're starting the podcast, we need to workshop an actual intro. Because here's the deal. Before, when I was, when it was just my
when you were riding solo,
when I was riding solo, I would just introduce it. I am Callahan. Blah 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 blah. Introduce the. The thing is you're not a guest anymore. So me introducing you kind of feels like I'm the superior. I don't know that I like that vibe. And so like what I want to figure out is like how do we introduce ourselves?
And you've already hit record because you want to workshop this live.
I want to workshop this live. This is the introduction to the episode. Of is Commander Masters the set that breaks CEDH?
It's not.
You and I not even introducing ourselves. We're just getting right into it. How the fuck do we introduce ourselves? Okay. Like how do we even do that conceptually?
So I like I could sort of take over the YouTube audience role where you introduce the topic and I sort of just go, no, it's not in the comments, but it's like sort of, but here already. So I sort of like cut the head off the Hydra. but then hopefully two more grow back. And by that, I mean, there's two people who are like, actually, yes, it is broken. And then we sort of create some like a narc gang war in our comments.
A narc narc gang war.
Yeah, no, that's harder to say, isn't it?
It is a lot harder to say than I thought that was going to be.
Or more realistically speaking, we could have a real intro.
We could have a real intro.
So I kind of like hitting it like a early 2000s DJ, be like, hey, welcome to the Mind Sculptors podcast. You've got Stinky and Pete in the morning, you know, kind of thing. Today we're talking about bitches, you know what I mean, like that kind of thing.
And you just have like all the little like the shock talk intros.
I know people who can record like hentai sound effects, so we'll just have a bunch of those like in the background too, you know.
So do you want to give that like a dry run?
We're really trying that one.
Give it a dry run. So welcome everybody to the Mind Sculptors.
Yeah, we're here to sculpt your fucking minds, dude.
Help you to get a winning mindset because you're a beta male.
Sponsored by Monster Energy. No.
Can you not call me out like that? I literally just went to the fucking gas station to pick up four monsters because it was out.
It's sadder because we're not actually sponsored by Monster Energy.
We're not actually sponsored by Monster, but I actually talk about Monster on the show in a reasonable amount. Yeah.
No, like, I tried to do that with actually Polar and White Claw on my own channel because I was like, hi, I drink your products way too much. Please give me money. And I was close with White Claw, I feel like, but then I sort of got lazy with it.
Well, you know, you got to get on that. You got to listen. You're doing this full time, baby. You got to get on that grind. You got to get on that grind. Listen,
I do have to get on that grind.
My brother and me could get Totino's to sponsor an episode.
That's true.
We can surely get some minor energy drink, some like B-list drink to sponsor an episode, right?
I was gonna say I drink Celsius religiously, but I think they actually might have reached a point where they're too big now.
Yeah, they might be too big. Yeah. I think they have gotten to the like middle-aged white woman crowd now.
Sure.
There is also a full like 20 pack of Celsius in our fridge right now.
That's what I'm saying. I was hanging out with I guess this is public information now because I've tweeted about it and stuff, but when I was hanging out with fucking Post Malone and crew, there was just a fridge full of Celsius, and I was like, oh, it's cool now. Oh shit.
Yeah. So in Louisville, I have to look up what it's called.
Yeah.
But Jack Harlow,
yeah,
is from
Louisville. He's got some weird soda thing, right?
Yeah, he has.
Right before I left childcare, the kids were really into it.
Yeah, it's called Focus.
Okay.
Focus. But
it
like,
doesn't. No, pause. I need to stop. It doesn't make you cool to replace an F with a PH. It doesn't. It's not cool. It's not exciting. It's stupid. Ian,
I'm going to send you a link to an image of what this can look like. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Because you're not going to think it says Focus at first. So I'm sending you an image in Discord, and I need you to look at this.
It sucks.
it looks like Pocus to me.
It does look like it says Pocus.
Because we live in Louisville and he's from here, right? And he actually, like, fun fact, he lives in our neighborhood. Mm. Or at least his Louisville home is in our neighborhood. So, like, I've been told that, some of the bookstores that I go to frequently, he just kind of will be there randomly. But because he's from Louisville, every single grocery store in town has Pocus fucking everywhere.
I still think it looks like it's like P-O-U-H-C-S.
Yeah. It looks like you're supposed to read it like that. For our audio listeners, I'm sorry, you're just kind of screwed.
Okay. But on YouTube, and I'm going to hold you to this, you're going to put an image up of this can, right?
Sure. I'm going to try and edit this the day we record it so that it's just done.
Editor's note. They did, in fact, not edit this the day of. Good job, Callahan, you stupid piece of shit.
Instead of doing what I usually do, which is record it
Sunday night,
and then play Crusader Kings for a week and then edit it the day before.
I hope you enjoyed playing Crusader Kings, you dumb fuck.
Right.
I'll tell you what, though. Monster Juice is where it's at. Pacific Punch, Monster Juice.
Hmm.
Not sponsored, but pick it up. Pick up a can.
Yeah.
You know, $3.19 at your local gas station, 2 for $4. It's a great deal.
Honestly, I'm more of a fan of the classic Monster flavors. The classic
Monster is foul.
No, you're just wrong. That's okay. It is
wretched.
Blue Monster is actually the best drink ever.
I'm talking like just original, like
original. Like OG green. The two cans. The OG green is kind of foul. There's green and blue, right?
The green one is foul. The blue one's okay.
I like the blue one a lot. Yeah. The blue one used to get me through a lot of bad nights.
So I used to drink, I think you might remember this. I used to drink like NOS.
Oh, yeah.
Like constantly. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then
I remember when you converted too.
Yeah, I made this like shift last year and it is like substantially healthier drinking this over NOS. And I was like, when we went to go see Taylor Swift, it was super late in the morning because we had a flat tire. So like on our way home, I was like, all right, I need something to like keep me awake in this torrential downpour on a spare tire so that I could just get home. And the only thing that this gas station had of the like energy drinks that I like was NOS. And so I was like, all right, I'll try it. And it had been almost a year since I have drank a NOS. And when it is it tasted like battery acid. It was gross. I was like, holy shit, how did I drink this? Like,
yeah, you used to do that shit every day. Think about that.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No. I'm also like, there's definitely energy drinks I type now that I'm like, oh, I'm definitely old because I drink like the ones with like just sugar. And I'm like, I used to think this was fine. I drink it now. And I'm like, ugh, like,
yeah,
gross.
I feel that way with like Pepsi, where I can't drink Pepsi because it's like, just feels like my mouth is coated in sugar after. Yeah.
I also do think COVID absolutely destroyed my taste buds. So that's like a part of it too. Like I already had a really bad sense of smell, but I think like just like anything that I used to enjoy flavor wise, because now like obviously I still can't eat like dairy or gluten anymore because of COVID, it's seeming like. Mm-hmm. So it also like just messed up just everything, just the whole system.
Good times. I will say for the dairy is if you lactose free milk, baby.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It also lasts forever too. Yeah. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. Also, Philly is like really nice for this stuff. Like it's genuinely like the most accommodating place food wise I've ever lived.
This, speaking of options, this set did not really give us a whole lot as far as set review goes. Talk about
it was mostly reprint set, right?
It was mostly reprint. And before we even get into the review, this I said this on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to elaborate on it a little more, is this point of I wish it was entirely a reprint set. Like I do like some of the new cards that are out. I think they're cool. But I do think it took away from the Masters feel of it to print new cards. What I wish they would have done is like for the Commander decks is like reprinted the Atraxa deck but with like updated cards, you know what I mean, like update those deck lists, go back to some of the older ones.
Just like give them a few more modern cards in there and like make them a little stronger, cleaner,
like arcane signets in them or something.
I think that would actually be a really cute idea moving forward. It's just like and especially if you're gonna charge like double the price, right? Like make it just like a little bit better in every way, right?
Yeah. Whereas with like these cards, like I'm looking at some of the cards that are in our list here, and almost all of them are at minimum like $10, which is granted that price will go down once people start buying the set.
Yeah, it's also tough because secondary market and all that. It's the set's also not out for 3 more days as of time of recording, right? So like that is the prices are shifted.
Yeah, the prices will change, but it's still just like wild to me. But we have 8 cards to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
2 commanders. I think there are some interesting cards here. I'm actually at least one of them is going to see CEDH play for sure. So let's start it off here.
Oh, I know which one. Okay. I was like, which one is definite? Oh yeah, that one.
We'll start off talking about the commanders and then we'll work through the rest of them. So we'll start off here with the Planeswalker Commander Commodore Guff.
Let's go.
It is a colorless blue, red, white Jeskai Planeswalker that comes in with 5 loyalty, can be your commander, and has a static ability that says at the beginning of your end step, put a loyalty counter on another target Planeswalker you control. Has a +1 ability that lets you create a 1/1 red wizard creature token with tap, add red, spend this mana only to cast planeswalker spells. And then -3, you draw X cards and Commodore Guff deals X damage to each opponent where X is the number of planeswalkers you control. So this was one of the cards. I didn't even have it on the list originally, and you DM me and you're like, hey, throw this on there. So it is like what is it? Super Friends, Jeskai Super Friends, like gonna be a thing?
Yeah. I was gonna mess with you and just be like, yeah, there's actually a 17-point chain veil combo where you the reason I put this on there is it's actually a pretty decent polymorph commander. Which is why I thought about talking that today. Yeah, so it comes down, it makes you a body, right? So the 1/1 that can tap for planeswalker mana. Any sort of planeswalkers you want to add to the deck that just inherently give you a little value? Like, I think like Teferi, Master of Time is like one that's pretty easy to throw in here. Yeah. That gives you Valley. 3-mana Teferi is obviously one you can put in just for the silence effect, but doesn't really work with what your commander's trying to do. So I don't think there's many like actual planeswalkers that are going to go in the deck and like be super, super powerful. But I don't think it's like the worst thing if you know that there's one or two that are like, OK, if this survives the turn of the table, like, you know, I could play an Ensnaring Bridge in my deck or something stupid like that to like make sure that no one attacks ever. Right.
Right.
So or you could play cards like Out of Time, which is really well positioned right now. And actually one of the best reasons the Teemer Polymorph deck that exists with Thrasios and Rograk right now, it doesn't get Out of Time. And like playing a creatureless deck is like one of the best ways to actually take advantage of that card.
Right.
And you can also you could play Humility in this deck. You lose your main win con, but like there's definitely stuff you can do with that, too. But
Humility's back too to the, I'm just going to continue to say it. Humility's too
it's, cute. I've seen some decent Shorokai lists. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, Guff it allows you to basically, you get access to all the polymorph colors, right? Unlike a deck like Shorokai, like I was just mentioning, because you get red, which has a ton of the polymorph effects, including the instant speed ones, which are significantly more strong, like Chaos Mutation and Divergent Transformation. And with the access to all of these, you can flip over into something like a Hullbreaker Horror or a Tidespout Tyrant, because Commodore Guff's minus ability is an infinite mana outlet. So what you can do is, because you only need one Planeswalker, i.e. Guff, it's -3 says, once again, you draw X cards and it deals X damage to each opponent, where X is the number of Planeswalkers you control, right? So you would proceed to bounce Guff, and then you bounce a Mana Rock, bounce a Guff, bounce a Mana Rock after you've generated infinite mana. And then you're able to ping, you're able to do some damage, but it does, once again, require you to draw. So it's actually more of a draw outlet in the command zone, mm-hmm. as opposed to just a direct damage outlet, like something like Jeska. and with that being said, there's a little bit of nuance as to like how you want to do that part of the equation, right? But and then you can obviously, you have infinite mana, and then you can draw your whole deck. Usually you can assemble a win. Most pilots would usually assume they can find a win con in that situation. Sure. but yeah, so that's the idea behind the deck. It's probably cute, but I like the idea that, like, once again, it gets white, which the other probably best polymorph deck in the format does not have access to white, and a lot of the best board wipes are white. And actually top 16 of the Cookout had Teemer Polymorph for like the first time in a while. That deck put up a result, so you know, it's a valid strategy. Once again, you know, Thrasios is a lot more value in the command zone than Guff, not gonna lie.
I think it's funny, the whole Thrasios conversation is, it has seen how it's evolved of people are like, oh, Thrasios just isn't that good, and it feels like they've kind of come back around to realizing, oh, Thrasios is really good, because like activating Thrasios is really strong. And it's like, this was and will always be true.
For sure.
I think Guff's kind of interesting. I think one of the interesting things I see with this is, if I was going to build like a polymorph deck with this, I think one of the things I would probably include is like Tezzeret the Seeker, just simply because you
get access, grab the artifact polymorph.
You can do that. You can also like get access to like Isochron Scepter Dramatic Reversal combos, which goes off with,
don't really work with your commander.
I mean, if it's an infinite, I guess you have to have a way to bounce it.
Exactly.
So I mean, I guess that's fair. But I mean, that was what I immediately thought of, was that you know Tezzeret, at least as a, is synergizes well with the commander, gets you some,
and the one ring
I'm gonna test Tezzeret in Tivit, because I'm
just getting the one ring with Tezzeret's fine. Like it's like when old birthing pod decks used to play Tezzeret just to tutor birthing pod. Like,
yeah, it's wild.
One ring's good. Like, it's really good. I saw it all weekend. It's the card's busted.
I got to play the one ring a few times over the weekend, and was extraordinarily impressed with it. And then I also watched like pro tour coverage, and I was just like,
it's
made like Tron like ridiculous cool.
It's crazier in 1v1 formats, I think, just because like you leveraging so much individual card draw against your opponents is like, I don't think it's comparable to anything
else. It also just gives like this is totally off topic, but I was watching the finals match from Park Pro Tour Barcelona, and traditionally, like, Scam is one of the hardest matchups for Tron because you just get your hand eviscerated. Well, you know, if you get a one ring, it's not a big deal because you just play it and then you basically get two turns where you just don't have to worry about it.
Absolutely.
Which is huge. The one ring, the real deal. And Commodore Guff, maybe good polymorph commander, question
maybe
mark?
Maybe we'll see. But you know, obviously, like, benefits of, like, you can play Torpor Orb in this deck, you can play Out of Time, you can play Vanquish the Horde, like, get all these, you know, very strong white effects and stacks effects, and maybe flip into a Hullbringer Horde, see what happens.
Well, let's look at the other commander here that we were going to be talking about. We're only talking about two of them. And the next one is Anakthea, Hand of Erebos. It costs two colorless, a white, black, and green. Is a legendary enchantment creature with the creature type Demigod. Has menace. Says other enchantment creatures you control have menace. And whenever Anakthea enters the battlefield or attacks, exile up to one target non-aura enchantment card from your graveyard. Create a token that's a copy of that card, except it's a 3/3 black zombie creature in addition to its other types. So, like, right away, there's, like, some really cool stuff that this can do with, like, just enchantments in general. Like, it can do some really interesting things with enchantment. Overall, what are your kind of thoughts on this commander? Because when I saw it, I was like, I mean, it feels like something's there. I don't know
what,
but
I thought you had the answer to that question. So to me, I mean, obviously, like, Entomb plus this card is a two card combo with whatever your best enchantment is, right? I guess the question is, like, what is your best enchantment?
That's a very good question. Now, I wonder, like, you can get, like, I guess you could get Necropotence. Out of Time is not great with this.
You can get Humility. Try figuring that one out, judges.
Layers. That actually kind of sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, that sounds awful. Because Humility itself is one.
Yeah, I mean, this was a card where I looked at and was like, it feels like there's probably something there. I feel like Cobblepot, I'm sure, has a brew for this.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your thoughts on it overall?
I'm literally right now on Scryfall looking up the highest value enchantments on EDH Rec. Does it say non-creature enchantment?
It says non-aura enchantment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, like, you could reanimate a Nyx Bloom Ancient pretty early on. That's not bad. Or Zendikar Resurgent.
Zendikar Resurgence hot.
Yeah. So I think, like, there's definitely, like, a value sort of graveyard deck you can make with it. And once again, Entomb and Unmarked Grave, because Unmarked Grave is actually really solid because a lot of, like, the best enchantments are not legendary, right?
Right.
Because it's not a card type that's easy to copy, right? So in that sense, there's definitely things you can do with it. Enchantress has been an archetype that has struggled historically in CEDH. Sithis is a deck that people have played. It has done okay at times, but I think it's made like a top 16 or two. But it's an archetype that sort of, like, has contradictions in the fact that it feeds a ton out of Dockside, but it can't play Rule of Laws. But you can play, like, obviously anti-artifact stuff, but you still want to have a certain amount of speed with the deck, and it plays, like, Curio lines. Like, Sithis is its own thing, right?
Right.
And I think this one has potential. I would assume someone is able to do some pretty nutsy stuff with it, and I think there's definitely a way to build it. I think it definitely can, you know, the fact that it completely relies on the graveyard is a little
I'm kind sad. Of personally laughing right now about the idea of putting a parallel lives into the graveyard with this and then getting a parallel lives creature. And then every enchantment that you make, you get two of them. Gets
two of them. Yeah. Okay.
Kind of just laughing at that right now.
Yeah.
Could put a Sandworm Convergence in there. I don't know why, but you could.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could do that. Let's see. I'm looking at all of them with like meta value 5 or higher. Yeah, Nyx Bloom pops up again. Zendikar Resurgent.
There's also Ethereal Absolution is another one you could put in there potentially.
Oh, you could play Lurking Predators. That'd be fun.
That's actually hot. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Endless Ranks of the Dead works with us pretty well.
Yep. Archetype of Endurance isn't bad either.
Oh yeah, I forgot that the archetypes are
enchantment creatures. Yeah, so there's like cute stuff you can do with this for sure. I don't know if it's like the next
thing,
but it can be the next thing.
I'm sure there's like a Walking Ballista Heliod like thing that it could do.
Yeah. I think there's definitely
doesn't mean it's in those colors already. Heliod's there, so it just gives you like a good way of like always having a Heliod.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was one of those cards where I saw it and I was like, it the effect is powerful, so it feels like it definitely has something that it can do. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is, but I feel like there is definitely something there.
I feel like this would be a really interesting like Oath of Druids deck.
Oh, that's right? A really interesting idea. Oath of Druids with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like you only play like big enchantment creatures, right? And then you're like, ooh.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do that. I don't know. It's interesting. Leave us a comment in the YouTube or somewhere if you have any ideas on Anakthea.
Break it. You right there in the audience, break this card.
No, not you.
Not you.
We're talking to you, not you. You.
Although, hey, look, person that Callahan just pushed aside. If you want to try and break it, that's fine, right? We have a little more faith in the other person that we pointed at, but like, you're great.
You're still good.
You're still great.
Well, let's move out of the commanders here to some of the more maybe in. I almost said intoxicating, but I think enticing is the word I'm actually looking for.
I think we should save the best one for last.
Yeah,
and that way, and that way you, the person we slightly just scorned, you don't click off the video because we know how you are. That's why we don't have faith in you to build the deck.
you don't stick around. You know what? However, you, the person who I did point out, you did a good job. You hit like and subscribe and click that bell.
Right.
The other person,
right?
I'll have faith in you once you subscribe, like, and turn on notifications. Yeah. Which,
I feel like we're really underestimating that person over there because they are actually signed up for the Patreon, and I have a lot of faith in people who do that too, for sure.
Good point. Go sign up for the Patreon. Hit subscribe, hit the like button, hit do all those things. Over half of our viewers and listeners aren't subscribed, which is fucking wild. So please subscribe. It's free. It costs you nothing.
It's free. Not the Patreon part. That costs you something.
Let's look at a sorcery here that is real cute. It's called Rise of the Eldrazi.
But Callahan, that's a set.
It's also a card, just like Urza's Saga.
Oh no, they got me.
And March of the Machine.
Yeah.
So Rise of the Eldrazi is a 12 mana sorcery that costs 9 colorless and then 3 specifically colorless mana.
9 generic, 3 colorless. Yes.
Thank you. The spell can't be countered. Mm-hmm. Destroy target permanent. Target player draws 4 cards. Take an extra turn after this one. And then you exile Rise of the Eldrazi. So I don't know if you've seen the way to break this card, Ian. But it's kind of hilarious.
Okay.
So back in, what was it? The Unset? Unfinity.
Oh, no, is this the bull guy?
Well, you'll just have to see. I'm gonna send you the picture of the card.
The fucking bowl guy. God damn it. This is spleen all over again.
So there's this card from Infinity called Magar of the Magic Strings. And it's a colorless, a black, and a red. Legendary Minotaur performer. And it has this activated ability for a colorless, black, and a red. Note the name of target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard and put it onto the battlefield face down. It's a 3/3 creature with whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, you may create a copy of the card with the noted name. You may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. And if this creature would leave the battlefield, exile it instead of putting it anywhere else. So
if there's an open player, you can just do this infinitely.
Correct.
It's okay.
Called Infinite Turns. Mm-hmm. And Infinite Destroy everybody's permanence.
Yeah, that is the thing for sure.
Yeah.
At some point you do actually have to start targeting other people with the draw four, which I also find very funny.
Yeah, that is funny. But so outside of that meme, Ian, Rise of the Eldrazi, do you think this has a home anywhere potentially? Or
I've already seen Magar talked about like this with like Peer into the Abyss. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, after a certain amount of stupid cards, there comes a time when you're like, god damn it, the stupid bowl. Right? Like, I think we're getting close, to be honest. I'm gonna just go update my TCG player cart real quick. But the other place that I really, really like this card is actually Narset. It's pretty nutso in that deck.
Really good hit, Narset.
One of the few turn spells that can't be countered. Like, you just want a high redundancy of these effects, right? So it's really solid. It gets you more cards too, because like Narset does have a habit of whiffing, from the experience I have with the list. It's just like you're trying to be consistent, right? And it's a tough deck to do that.
Right.
So that being said, I think the card will see play. It's obviously, we're talking about some of the more fringe decks of the format. Not that we weren't all convinced that Magar of the Hidden Strings was a tier one archetype.
No, but it's the best. Listen, if people were playing it, it would be number one on my power rankings every single month.
Yeah, just because it's just so strong.
Yeah,
right?
It's unbeatable. I don't know why people aren't playing it.
They can't see the strings. If they could see the strings,
they can't see the strings. There are no strings on me. But
Yes, thank you. We all needed the Pinocchio reference.
Yeah, it was inevitable. Yeah, I mean, I think this card is interesting. I like the idea that in Narset, especially because it's just like a really, really strong hit off of that. Mm-hmm. The other one, the other place I was kind of like, this seems like it could potentially be pretty strong in, is in Yuriko, where, you know,
yeah,
it's a good hit, but also like it's not, I don't know that it's unreasonable to cast this.
They don't have Yuriko. So it's like a null rod deck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they don't have a lot of ways to, or at least traditionally in the lists that have been doing well lately, they tend to be a little harder on these effects, you know. So mm-hmm.
Who knows? It's a powerful card.
It
seems pretty interesting. Build those Magar lists, guys. Mm-hmm. Magar is I think I'm gonna spec on that card, because I think that's gonna be the new CEDH thing taking over the meta. Mm-hmm.
Magar of the Hidden Strings.
Yep. Magar of the Hidden Strings.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Spec on that card, guys.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Next card on our list is an instant. It is Guff. Mm-hmm. Wow. Guff rewrites history. That's two colorless and a two generic and a red. I guess I should clarify that. And it says, for each player, choose target non-enchantment, non-land permanent that player controls. Those permanents' owners shuffle them into their libraries. Each player who controlled one of those permanents exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card, and then put the rest on the bottom of their library in a random order. Each player may cast the non-land card they exiled without paying its mana cost. So, Ian, there's a couple things here that I think are interesting. One is this is kind of like Chaos Warp on steroids in a way. But also, because I'm the madman that I am, is stuff like Teferi, Time Raveler, Drannith Magistrate, Lavinia, Boromir, all of that stuff makes this just a three mana. Destroy three things and exile three cards.
I will say it does hit your stuff too.
It does.
Yeah, it is. So it is one thing. Is you, it doesn't say for each player choose up to, but you do have to choose one of those permanents no matter what, right? So if you only have one creature that you like, that is a big downside for this card, I would argue. But I agree, in like stacks of your builds, I don't hate the idea of this just like three for wanting some stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we were talking about this last week, where we were talking about when, with the whole thing with like Tivit, where you do like, if you don't want to use like your Abrupt Decay on the Mana Vault, because sure, you stop the Tivit deck, but what do you do about the other people?
It's one for wanting. Yeah.
Is this does feel like it's a card where we're starting to get some amount of answers that like do let control players be better at playing control.
I hate that this says non-enchantment though. I enchantments agree. Are a really important card type right now, between Rhystic, Mystic, Dress Down, Underworld Breach, like Underworld Breach. And it not hitting that is really awkward. I'm like pretty disappointed by that line of text, if I'm being honest. I think I would like this card a lot more if it could hit enchantments. And I know it's like there's you know, things like Mana Crypt and Mandibles, but like also like you could hit a Mana Crypt and flip into an Ad Nauseam, you know what I mean? So like that part like bums me out a little bit.
So
yeah, this is important.
Polymorph technically too.
No, because they don't
have non-land card. Never mind,
right? So that's what makes this card a lot worse. If it was a polymorph, I think it would be way more interesting for conversations. But I like, it's still cool. It definitely allows you to take a leg up on the board state. And once in a deck like Narset, actually, the odds of you like hitting a mana rock and flipping into like an extra turn effect are actually pretty hot. So if your deck has a lot of big hits, this doesn't suck as much.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting as we're going through this, as I'm starting to get the impression of, oh, did Narset just kind of get like some good tools this set?
It is the Narset.
God damn it. I love it. So this is one of those cards where I do think in like Art and Chrom, I feel like it's probably playable. Just from the perspective of getting to really break parity on the like Lavinia effects that we're already playing,
and
those sorts of things. Like, you really get to do that, and you're playing a control deck, so being able to three for one everything feels really good.
I'm with you.
So it'll be interesting. Next card on our list, this is another card that Ian specifically asked for, is Gatewatch Beacon. It is two generic mana and a white artifact that enters the battlefield with three loyalty counters on it. You can tap it to add white mana, and it also says, whenever a planeswalker enters the battlefield under your control, if Gatewatch Beacon has loyalty counters on it, you may move a loyalty counter from Gatewatch Beacon onto that planeswalker. So with this card, where are you seeing this? What is your specific kind of like ideas with this?
Yeah. So this is specifically a card that, thanks to Scoop Phase, I saw this on Twitter, they were talking about this card. It turns Dehada into a card that can double minus.
Oh, wow.
And that deck already has a lot of explosive potential with the minus ability. Mm-hmm. So being able to minus and then go to your next turn and then minus again while also gaining a mana rock on your turn is actually pretty solid. Just because the whole point of that deck is to fill the yard and then Yogg's Will or Breach with the flicker combos and stuff like that. And the ability to not only double minus, but then double minus and either put Dehada in the graveyard or kill it and then have it be able to be played again, gets another loyalty counter and can double again, is like actually pretty solid. So it's a weird card for the deck, but it's actually a pretty decent upgrade for what the list is already kind of trying to do. It's a little like there are like cards in the list that are like the mid-range Dehada pieces, like Mayhem Devil and stuff like that, and this definitely subscribes to that, right? Like it is one of the mid-range pieces, but it provides like a lot of necessary just like cleanness to what the deck is trying to do, right? Because the biggest like misconception with Dehada, what I'm hearing from a lot of Dehada pilots, is like they want you to kill their Dehada. They want to be able to cast it again from the command zone. They want it to be able to either put in the graveyard and stuff like that. So the fact that this can then double minus and kill itself is like actually really huge.
What I'm hearing is you shouldn't attack the Dehada.
You should attack the Dehada in a way that removes loyalty counters so it can't minus, but doesn't put it in the graveyard or the command zone. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So if you have the option of like, if for example, I know a lot of the things people will do, like play Dehada, minus it, and then they'll uptick to the +2. If you hit it below the minus ability again, that's really huge.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that is good to know. I like, the more I hear and the more I look at these Dehada lists, the more I'm like, this deck seems like a deck that I would like very much enjoy. As far as
it's like, kind of, it's like really unique. It's crazy. Like it's fun. I enjoyed it a decent amount. I lent it to somebody to play, and I was watching them play it, and I was like, oh, okay, I kind of like the play patterns. And it was the only I played the Cookout last weekend, didn't qualify, but there was a redemption event the next day that was just like three rounds of playing, and the only deck I lost to was the Dehada list by Zane. He was piloting it quite well.
So. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah
that's cool deck, cool card. Mm-hmm. Interesting to see how some of these more fringe cards find homes in some of these decks.
Especially in a deck that's like more mainstream nowadays, right?
Yeah. No kidding. Next card on our list is another artifact. It is Darksteel Monolith. And it is 8 generic mana. It's indestructible. And once each turn, you may pay 0 rather than pay the mana cost for a colorless spell that you cast from your hand. And so with this, I've seen a few people talking about stuff specifically with, Duretti, with using this as a way to get like Duretti things rolling. What are your thoughts on this? Is like this a viable piece for Duretti, or do you think it's like,
I honestly haven't thought about Duretti in a really long time, if I'm being honest.
That's super
It's a deck I enjoy quite a lot in concept, but never in execution. It's also a deck that I feel like I often go like, I should spend some time with that list because I feel like I could like make something that I'd be comfortable with, and then I never do. To me, this strikes me a little odd just because the way I've seen Duretti played in the past, it's not like a cards in hand issue, right? It's more like a what can I do with the pieces that I have kind of thing, right? And you know, pitching the things in the graveyard to then bring them back and stuff like that. So to me, this strikes as a bit odd, if I'm being honest. But I kind of like it. Definitely, it's the indestructible thing helps a ton, right? I've seen that with the One Ring. Like clearly, the cards like the indestructible on artifacts are a real deal. Like I've sat there with a Besager in my hand going, right? But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't think the cards in hand issue is something they're struggling with a lot, right? So to me, that's like the biggest issue I see with the card.
What is a deck that you do think would benefit from this?
I mean, Duretti's up there, right? Arkham, maybe, depending on the version of Arkham. Like, if there's ever a situation where you're like, where you're stuck with a bunch of cards in hand, that's definitely a way to get through it. I think about that deck more often than I think most people do, just because there was a guy at my local game store who used to play it and do really well with it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of the decks that want to do Curse Totem sort of lock, or not Curse Totem,
yeah.
Possessed Portal or Portal to Phyrexia mm-hmm. sort of locks
yeah.
are kind of interested in this.
Yeah.
I don't know how it feels like red decks in particular would be interested in this, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I guess my question with it is because I have seen a handful of people, not enough, like a lot. Also, the set is just like there were only like 70 new cards and like maybe five of them are really worth talking about. Mm-hmm. But like I've seen some amount of people talking about it as like mm-hmm. a way to play Portal to Phyrexia or Possessed Portal or some of those those things. And I guess my thought has been, well, I guess if you're cheating this out, then can't you just cheat out the portal? But I don't know. It's interesting. It's a cool card. Mm-hmm. Let us know in the comments what you think about it. I think that the ability to cheat stuff into play and specifically get the cast
mm-hmm.
like if there's like a cast trigger from it that you get is very strong mm-hmm. but I don't know. I'm interested to see what would be interested in that card.
Mm-hmm.
Next card on our list is an enchantment, and this is one that I actually think is somewhat interesting, and it's Descendant's Fury. It's three generic and a red enchantment. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, you may sacrifice one of them. If you do, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card that shares a creature type with the sacrificed creature. Put that card on the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. So before I even, you know, go any further, obligatory, is this a Nigella card joke here?
Yes, of course. We figured it out. We've cracked it.
We've cracked the code. This is what it's been missing. But overall, like, there are some things like I specifically felt like the Malcolm and Breaches deck really gets a huge advantage out of this because it just gets you straight into your Glinthorn.
Mm-hmm. It's a little awkward, right? Because it flips into a Glinthorn, but Glinthorn won't be attacking.
Right. It is a little awkward with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are some other things you could flip into this? I'm thinking
I feel like there's a version of Winota that could play this, not the current iteration, but like it'd be kind of interesting to like flip some goblins into bigger goblins or humans into humans. Like you can always trade up like a Mother of Runes into like a Rick.
Right.
But the other things I'm thinking about this card, I think Goblin is I think goblins are pretty potent with this. I think there's we get every once in a while just like a couple pieces and I'm like, is Muxus finally a thing? Maybe? No? Okay, we'll keep trying, right? Like,
does Muxus finally have what it takes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I saw this and I specifically wanted to talk about it because I was like, well, there's obviously some amount of decks that, you know, if you can flip into a particular creature, or if you have a creature type that your commander is that shares with one of yours in the deck, that this can be either just a really good generic source of value or also like a potential like redundant piece for a polymorph maybe sort of deck. I don't know, it's always hard for me to like look at decks because it's like every time I try to like I come up with an idea, I'm always just like, oh no, but that stops it. And I don't know.
I definitely like the idea of like hitting someone with a goblin lackey, getting a goblin lackey trigger, putting in a big old creature, and then like flipping into like, I don't know, a crazy goblin, you know, like stuff like that. I think is like, there's something there. I just feel like, man, now I'm in a mental mission to like, it. What's the most viable way to play goblins right now? It's probably Muxus, but like
Muxus. I'm sure there's like two colored goblins, right? Like,
right. So that you can like Deafening Silence in the goblins deck seems really hot, but like,
let me look at some typal commanders here. Let me look at some typal goblin commanders. So we've got obviously we've got I guess Soramen's not a bad one, actually. The Grixis one, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, amass Orcs X, where X is that spell's mana value, and goblins and orcs you control have ward 2. Muxus, obviously. Ugluk of the White Hand is an orc soldier. Actually, what's actually kind of hilarious is this actually might be a semi-decent card in Zada.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Zada's a weird one. I keep thinking it works and then it doesn't.
Yeah, Zada's one of those decks where like it just like plays so many cards that just don't do anything.
But it's
fun when it goes off. Also, Goro Goro and Satoru is a Grixis goblin human. So you get like two different card types that you could hit off of that.
I think that deck is a thing that has been underexplored.
Goro Goro.
Yeah, Satoru and Goro Goro. Yeah.
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 Whenever more creatures enters the battlefield this turn, deals combat damage to a player. Create. Yeah, I mean, that seems... I think the issue is, right, is that like everybody just sees Grixis and then just plays the same Grixis pile.
Yeah, the same Grixis pile we've been playing for 30 fucking years. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. For sure. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, just playing like turn one Loyal Apprentice, turn two Satoru Goro, hit your opponents, make a 5/5, and then next turn just like hit them again with a new one that comes in and make a 5/5, and then you know, if you ever do any extra combat, extra turn stuff, like that's all, you know, interesting at the very least.
And then you can play like just like Grixis control behind that. Because it turns out Grixis is a good control color pairing also. Yeah. Fun fact. It's not just Go Burn.
Yeah. And also the fact that it has the Timna policy too, which is kind of interesting, right? Like it's like if you hit three players, that's 3 5/5s you've made in one combat.
God, that's so hot.
I think it's out of hand kind of fast, huh?
Do
you want to make a tempo deck?
maybe we should brew this and do a Brewer's Choice episode on this. I don't think that's a bad idea. But anyway, Descendant's Fury, interesting card, can hit a lot of different stuff. You know, maybe try it in some of your decks where you're a little bit. One of the things I think is interesting that I don't think a lot of people think about is like human is like one of the most like the most played card creature type in CEDH, and so I don't think enough people like really think about how many good humans you could just flip into. I think that's it's also really funny because you could use this to I'm getting way too memey with this, but you could use this to sacrifice an Arena Rector to flip into a thing and then also be getting, because you're sacrificing it, you can also get a Vivian, and so you can just go combo off on top of everything. It's beautiful. It's perfect. No notes.
Definitely no notes at all.
No notes. Last card on the list is our only creature, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the cast last week, is Skittering Cicada. It costs 3 generic mana. It's an insect creature that has flash, and you may cast colorless spells as though they had flash. And whenever you cast a colorless spell until end of turn, Skittering Cicada gains trample and gets +X/+X. Where X is that spell's mana value, which is actually kind of really good.
Yeah.
That's sort of like bananas that that is. Mm-hmm. It just keeps getting bigger if you just have mm-hmm. stuff that you can cast.
Yep.
So obviously, because and this is where I'm going to be a little grumpy bear. And you got to see this set a whole month before I did.
These cards I only got a week ahead of time.
Okay, yeah. So you got to see them a week before I did.
Yeah.
Because only one half of us is an MTG ambassador.
Yes, that's right.
So, what are your thoughts on this card? Obviously, we've been talking about Flash as an archetype on this show for about a month, and this kind of keeps adding card. It feels like as soon as we brought it up, I just kept seeing more Flash stuff enter into circulation.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I was the first one in this house to open up these commander decks, and I opened it up and I was like, that's another Shimmermere. That's crazy. it's a very strong effect, right? I think we have yet to find the reason to best utilize these. I think the Heliod Ballista list is using them to great effect right now. But the fact that we now have three mana cards that can make colorless artifacts have flash is pretty huge.
And then
we have variation
within that, on top of that, which is
We have Wrath Capuchin on top of that as well. Yeah. Like all of these effects that are just flashing in these artifacts or colorless spells or something like that. Because Liberator hits artifacts and colorless, Shimmermere just hits artifacts, and Cicada just hits colorless. But they all, if you have a win con that is a colorless artifact, turns out you now have five separate ways to give those flash, and three of those cost the same three generic mana. So that is consistency beyond all belief, and that is something very worth taking a look at.
So it was Shimmer Zur maybe back on the menu? Is that? I know Drake Sasser's been talking about Zur. I mean, what is Zur more of a deck now than maybe it was before?
Yeah, I mean, once again, Born Upon the Wind just came out in Lord of the Rings as well, right? Yeah. And I know Drake, I was talking to him this weekend, and he had mentioned something about Zur being a real thing. I don't think it's wrong by any means. I think it's something that's definitely good. I just feel like Flash is so good, right? Mm-hmm. And to relegate it to the end step is exceptionally okay, right? I feel like we can do better than that. I feel like there are things that are probably a lot more busted that we can do that are not just flashing in a Cicada so that you can Zur combo on the end step, which is an extremely telegraph thing to do, right? I think going for a win con at instant speed is really the piece that you're missing, mm-hmm. right? Even things like flashing in a one ring, right? Like stuff like that is blocked your Nvila attack for the whole turn, and then I'm gonna draw and then untap and draw again. You know what I mean? All that stuff one is ring's
so good.
Yeah, the one ring's really good. but all of that stuff, I think, is where we start to get to some really interesting topics and conversations and points of debate.
Yeah. So. It's interesting. Now, one thing that I do want to ask you, because mm-hmm. this is something briefly mentioned, is in a deck like Ardenchrom, do you think these flash effects in that deck are worth playing?
What are you flashing in apart from equipment, which you need sorcery speed anyways, right? I said you need to equip at sorcery speed anyways, right? So to me, that's kind of the hamstring there, right? It's you can flash in a GTA at end step and then untap and equip it, but you also had to cast a 3 mana flash enabler to do that, right?
Right. That's why I've always liked Sigarda's Aid so much, is because it does mm-hmm. do both, lets you cash things at flash
and attack, also
have the combat tricks on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why also, I forget what the name of the card is whenever an enchantment whenever an equipment enters the battlefield, you may attach it to target.
The Forge New card, right? Or no?
The what? Oh, Forge New. Yeah, Forge New. Yeah. I really like Forge New too, because
Hammer of Nazan does the same thing, I think.
Right? Yeah. So just some of those cards like that. I'm definitely revisiting a lot of Arden stuff after taking some time off to play Tivit. There's just a lot of... What'd you say?
Is it because Tivit?
Yeah, I mean, Tivit's still probably just going to be my main deck, but, you know, it's... Need to put some work into my boys. But so before we go, I do want to say this. So there were a couple of people in our comment section last week who were asking us specifically on our comments about Atraxa, why we were saying it was hard to build, or people are building it incorrectly. And you know, I'll let you answer it the way you want to answer it. I will say I have now built three different variations of it that are all like either you put like all the different ways people have built it. And then I built like my own version of it. And after playtesting it for the last like week, in 2 weeks, I want you to know that this deck has broken me. trying to figure out how to build this correctly is actually like maybe the biggest puzzle. Because it's like I can tell you something's wrong, right? Because when I play the deck, I'm like, this deck feels clunky. It doesn't feel like it is moving very quickly. It doesn't feel like it feels like if somebody just mana drains your Atraxa or counters your Atraxa when you cast it, you're just screwed. And hilariously in Tivit, I've never felt like that is an issue. But in Atraxa, it has always felt like it's an issue. And so for you, what do you see as the like barriers? Like what is the issue that people are having with this deck?
So, I mean, the big one is people think it's Tivit, which is not. Right. And 6 mana versus 7 mana might not sound like a lot, but it's actually insane. Like the difference between those is insane. The fact that people are like building the 99 of Atraxa as if you're just only supposed to ever turbo out Atraxa is a lot. Then I've seen people play it like it's supposed to be an ad nauseum deck with Atraxa as backup, which has problematic play patterns to its own, because once again, you don't have red, right? Which is a huge color for playing Atraxa. I've seen people who are playing Mox Amber in their Atraxas specifically just for Displacer Kittens.
But also aren't like, playing Lotus Petal, which I think is
And it's like, why? And like, it's just stuff like that. It's just craziness where it's like, I think I've just seen like it just play patterns, because people are like, okay, I'm going to focus on turboing out Atraxa, but or people who will like commit to an artifact plan because they're playing Gnaws, but not fully commit to an artifact plan and still try and play Dorks at the same time. And kind of like forgetting every lesson we've ever learned in building Tivit, which was like, you build a mid-range deck that has 4-color good stuff cards, and then sometimes you have this over-the-top late-game engine that actually just wins you the game. Or you mulligan for your Smothering Tithe and like hope that that gets you there too, right? And it's like, I genuinely feel like people are missing the lessons that we've been learning with Tivit, and also, you know, not recognize the fact that Atraxa does not have the same win cons that Tivit does, and we have to you know, work according to those as well. I think a lot of people keep trying to build it like a green deck, which I think you're supposed to build it like an Esper deck that has some green in it.
I tried putting Dorks in it, and I was just like completely unenthused with the Dorks. The cards that did stand out to me from green that I really liked, obviously Worldly Tutor, cards like what's the green and white Elidomri's Call, Court of Calling Finale, like obviously like the tutors you get from green. Also a card that I've been seeing just inexplicably missing from these decks is Veil of Summer, and I'm just like, why are we not playing Veil of Summer? This is like the best, one of the best cards in green. Like
I don't ever play that card anymore, but I know a lot of people do, so
it's a deck that's very hard to crack the code on, I feel like, because it's kind of, it reminds me a little bit, I've talked to you about this before, but like, you know how Arden Thrasios feels like it should be a thing, but then you sit down and you try to build it and it's like, oh, this is pulling me in like two different directions. And I think the issue is that green is a very bad splash color. Because green really wants to be your main color. And it's not a good support color.
Yeah, agreed. Vehemently agreed.
And so I think that's really what the issue ends up being. But
like, people keep asking about like Gaia's Cradle and Atraxa, and I keep going like, every time I've seen a Gaia's Cradle and Atraxa, it's actively bad.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I mean, and stuff like that is like, a little trap. Like, it's another thing where you're like, yes, you're right, green is not a good support color. So like, why try to make this like very Esper heavy deck a green deck?
Yeah. Yeah. That for the people in the comments that were asking me to elaborate that, and for the people on Twitter asking me to elaborate that, engage with my content, and that's how you will get your answer. What were you gonna say?
I said free engagement.
Yeah, free engagement. With that being said, Ian, where are you gonna be here in the next few weeks? How can people find you? All that good stuff.
Well, I'm about to take off for Gen Con in nearly 24 hours, and I'll be there doing all the Gen Con stuff. And by the time this episode airs, Gen Con will be over. So I'm not going to tell you to come find me there. But you can check my Twitter to see if I had the spoons to tweet anything out about being there. Gen Con was awesome last year. It was my first time going, and I'm very excited to go back. Big shout out to Mono White Guy, Charles, fellow Skelpty boy, who brought me last year, and because I had to bail on last minute plans, and was just like, hey, do you want to come to this thing that's a super big investment? And I was like, yeah, sure, might as well. Yeah. So Gen Con is so much fun, though. One of my favorite conventions I've ever been to, and it's gonna be a ton of great stuff. I'm gonna be there with international superstar Lewis Stardust and several other people in the community. And
you're only 90 minutes away from me, so I feel like we should probably meet up, but
yeah, you should drive into Gen Con.
But so also, you know, make sure go check out Comedian MTG on YouTube and all that stuff.
Yeah,
get your coaching.
Yes, feel free to check me out on youtube.com/comedianmtg. You can check me at Twitter at comedian_mtg. You can find me on any of those social medias, and Twitter, Discord, YouTube, all those things. And yeah, we do see EDH coaching, which you can go to my email at gmail.com, comedianmtg@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, Discord, any of those places to DM me about those things. I have a new type of coaching coming up pretty soon, which is going to involve like playing games, breaking down the games afterwards, and then having a regular coaching session associated with that. So keep your ears out for that, because I'm really excited to do that. It's been a thing a couple people requested, and I was like, okay, well, let's find a way to actually like make this happen. And I'll have details for that in a video soon. So,
yeah. Well, it looks like, by the way, the what is it? The r/MTG or r/CEDH is back, by the way.
Oh, I heard. Yeah, that they did only disappear for but a moment.
Yeah. But before we leave, a deck that punishes opponents for drawing cards, playtesting cards. I've been playing Magic for 10 years, but have only recently started looking into CEDH. Call me a bit of a bastard, but I've always had love for cards that aren't exactly stacks pieces, but punish opponents for drawing or playing too many cards. Examples of cards I like are Rhystic Stunt, Smothering Tide, and the recent Orcish Bowmasters. You like that card? Are there any good commanders that provide an effect like this, or play a strategy that incentivizes you to run most or all of those cards? The only CEDH decks I've played our Mono White Stax Ballista combo and Blood Pod. Any help is appreciated. With that, I'm Callahan.
And I'm Ian.
I'm trying to keep, yeah. All these memories bittersweet, yeah. Gotta move, can't stay here no more. 여기 계속 있다가 나와서 내가 돼. 'Cause we can't keep making these rain clouds stay overhead. Don't wanna keep this going. Can't fix what's already broken. 생각을 돌이켜봐.